Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really interesting case, Nilsen v. York County.
Yeah, it's one of those cases that, you know, touches on so many practical areas for a law student.
Exactly. We're talking constitutional rights in detention, fairness in class action settlements, especially with gender involved, and how lawyers actually get paid in these big cases.
It really covers a lot of ground. We've gone through the rulings, the analysis, trying to pull out the core things you really need to know. Think of it as a bit of a shortcut through the dense material.
Perfect. So, okay, let's dive in. This all started with a specific policy at the York County Jail back in 1996, right? What was going on?
That's right, 1996. York County Jail, they had this blanket policy. Basically, everyone arrested and brought in got strip searched.
Everyone. No exceptions.
No exceptions. It didn't matter if it was for, say, a minor traffic offense or something serious. And critically, there was no need for any suspicion that the specific person was hiding anything. It was just automatic.
Wow. So you get arrested for maybe an unpaid parking ticket, and you could face a strip search.
That's exactly the scenario that led to the lawsuit.
Okay. That sounds, well, pretty extreme. What was the legal challenge based on?
It was a class action lawsuit arguing that this policy flat out violated the Fourth Amendment.
Right. The protection against unreasonable searches and seizures.
Precisely. The argument was that a blanket policy like this, with no individual suspicion, just couldn't be considered reasonable, especially for minor offenses.
Okay, so that's the first big issue. The Fourth Amendment angle. What's the standard we need to think about for searches in jails?
Well, the key case everyone looks to is Bell v. Wolfish. The Supreme Court said searches in jails need to be reasonable.
Reasonable. Okay, what does that generally mean in practice?
Generally, it means you need some specific reason, individualized suspicion, to think someone's hiding contraband or is a security threat before you do something as intrusive as a strip search.
Unless there are maybe exceptional circumstances.
Right, like very clear security needs, maybe dealing with violent offenders or specific intel. But for the average arrestee, you usually need a reason specific to them.
So applying Bell to the York County policy, it seems like a mismatch, doesn't it?
It really does. And the court in Nilsen agreed. They found that the blanket policy failed the reasonableness test.
Because it didn't consider the individual or the offense.
Exactly. It treated someone arrested for, you know, bouncing a check the same way it treated someone arrested for assault. Search-wise, the court basically said that's not reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, you can really see why. I mean, just imagine being put through that for something minor. It really highlights why that reasonableness standard is there.
It absolutely does. It shows there are real limits on government power, even when someone's been arrested. The level of intrusion has to be justified.
Okay, so the blanket policy was found unconstitutional. Let's shift gears to the settlement part.
Yeah.
This is where the gender issue comes up, right?
Yes. So after litigation, the parties reached a proposed settlement. A $3.3 million fund was created to compensate the class members.
And part of the deal was also that York County had to change its policy.
Correct. A key part was getting rid of that unconstitutional blanket strip search policy. But then came the issue of how to divide up that $3.3 million.
What was the plan there?
The initial proposal was, well, controversial. It suggested that women in the class should receive twice as much money as the men.
Twice as much. What was the justification for that?
The reasoning offered was that women, supposedly, experience more humiliation and trauma from being strip searched compared to men.
Hmm. And how did the court react to that proposal?
Judge Hornby, who was overseeing the case, rejected it flat out.
Why?
He stated very clearly that there was no actual evidence presented by the county to support this claim that women inherently suffer more. He saw it as relying on, frankly, harmful stereotypes about women's modesty.
Ah, so it bumps up against the Equal Protection Clause.
Exactly. The 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, it means the state has to treat people under its jurisdiction equally.
And when you have a classification based on gender, like this proposed settlement payout,
yeah,
there's a specific legal test, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Gender classifications are subject to what's called intermediate scrutiny.
Okay, intermediate scrutiny. What does that require?
It means the government, or in this case, the parties proposing the unequal split, have to show that treating men and women differently is substantially related to achieving an important government interest.
And stereotypes don't count as an important interest, I take it?
Definitely not. Judge Hornby was very clear on this. He famously said, stereotypes about women's modesty aren't a valid basis for unequal payouts. You can't just assume women are inherently more damaged by this experience.
So the court said you need facts, not generalizations, to justify treating people differently based on gender in a settlement like this.
Precisely. While individual experiences obviously vary, you can't just draw a line based purely on gender without solid justification. It reinforces outdated ideas and violates equal protection.
That's such a crucial point for law students. Even if something seems maybe intuitive, if it's based on gender stereotypes without evidence, it likely won't pass constitutional muster.
Absolutely. It underlines the need for rigorous, fact-based reasoning whenever the law proposes treating groups differently. Fairness to all class members is key.
Okay, that brings us to the third big piece, attorney fees. Always a significant factor in class actions. How much were the lawyers asking for here?
The plaintiff's attorneys requested 30% of the $3.3 million common fund.
30%? That's nearly $1 million.
It is a substantial amount.
Did the court agree to that?
No. The court decided to award 25% of the fund instead, which came out to $825,000.
Still a lot, but less than requested. Why the reduction? How did courts figure this out?
Well, the court has a duty to ensure fees are reasonable, protecting the class member's recovery. There are generally two main ways courts approach this. The lodestar method and the percentage of the fund or market mimicking approach.
Okay, lodestar first. What's that involve?
Lodestar involves calculating the number of hours the attorneys reasonably spend on the case and multiplying that by a reasonable hourly rate for their experience and location.
Seems straightforward, but are there downsides?
One potential criticism is that it might theoretically incentivize lawyers to run up the clock, you know, spend more hours than strictly necessary.
Right. So what's the alternative, the market mimicking approach the court used here?
The market mimicking approach tries to replicate what would happen in the private market. The court asks, if this were a private contingency fee case, what percentage would the client and lawyer likely have agreed upon?
So like a typical contingency fee percentage.
Exactly. The court looks at the risk, the complexity, the result achieved, and compares it to typical contingency fees in similar types of litigation in that area, often ranging from, say, 25% to maybe 33% or higher in some complex cases.
And why did Judge Hornby prefer that method in Nilsen?
He felt it better reflected the economic reality of these kinds of cases and aligned with what lawyers and clients actually agree to in practice. He even said something like, the market mimicking approach is most reflective of what a judge does instinctively.
Interesting. So it provides a kind of objective market benchmark.
Yeah, it helps constrain judicial discretion a bit and aims for predictability. He found that 25% was more in line with the market rate for this type of case in that jurisdiction, considering the risk and effort involved.
Even though the lawyers did a good job.
Oh, yes. He acknowledged the quality of their work, but felt 30% was just a bit too high compared to the market standard for similar cases. It's always a balance between rewarding counsel and maximizing the recovery for the class.
Okay, so let's just quickly summarize the key outcomes then.
Sure. So $3.3 million settlement fund created. Big policy change at York County Jail. No more blanket strip searches without cause.
Which is a huge win in itself.
Absolutely. And then attorney fees awarded at 25% or $825,000.
So boiling it down for our law student listeners, what are the absolute must-know takeaways from Nilsen?
Okay, three big ones. First, Fourth Amendment. Intrusive searches like strip searches generally need individualized suspicion. Blanket policies are highly suspect.
Got it. Second.
Second, equal protection. You can't treat groups differently in settlements based on gender stereotypes. Any distinction needs real, factual justification related to an important goal. Remember the quote, "The Constitution does not permit remedial discrimination based on broad generalizations."
Powerful quote.
And third.
Third, attorney fees. Courts increasingly use a market mimicking percentage of the fund approach in class actions, looking at what's reasonable based on typical contingency fees, balancing lawyer compensation with the class's recovery.
What did that mean for the actual people in the class? How much went to them?
After the $825,000 in fees and some capped litigation costs, I think around 3%, about $2.4 million was left for distribution to the class members themselves.
So yeah, a case that really hits on fundamental constitutional rights, procedural fairness, and the practicalities of legal compensation.
Definitely. It shows how legal principles play out in real-world situations, affecting both individual rights and how institutions operate.
It's a great case study. As you're all continuing your studies, keep these principles in mind. Reasonableness in searches, equal protection, fair settlements. They come up again and again.
They really do. And maybe a final thought to leave folks with.
Yeah.
Consider how these Nilsen principles privacy in detention, non-discrimination in settlements, market fees might apply to new issues. Think about digital privacy during arrests or ensuring fairness in huge data breach or consumer fraud class actions today.
That's a great point. How do these established legal ideas adapt to modern challenges? Definitely something worth thinking about.